Today we are going to begin a new chapter in our lives, electrolytes and fluid imbalance. What we are going to do is we're going to review the normal physiology of fluid and electrolyte balance. Hopefully you got at least a small foundation in chemistry and in A&P, and it will really help if you go back and review your old notes or books from there. Alternatively, you can just try and plow through using the MedSurg book as your guide. The Laney book has some stuff, but it's more focused on the drug aspect, not so much on just the normal physiology. Then we're going to talk about fluid imbalances, and there's really two possibilities. You can either have too much or too little. But when you combine that with salt abnormalities, electrolyte abnormalities, you actually come up with a couple other different combinations. But it all comes back down to too much or too little. Then we're going to talk about electrolyte disturbances themselves, beginning acid-base imbalance. Now, acid-base is a kind of tricky subject, and we're just really going to introduce it right now, and then you'll apply it later on when you get to fundamentals and med-surg nursing. And then the last thing we'll talk about is fluid types. These are the actual IV fluids that we give a person in the hospital and in other settings. So here we can see the normal composition of humans. Now, what do you notice about itty-bitty babies? They have more water content than solid content. Humans, adults, and older adults, what you notice is that you begin getting more solid and less water as a person ages. Now, out of the water in a person's body, we have said it can happen in four places. What are the four places water can occur in the body? Okay, so the two big ones are intracellular versus extracellular. And what are the two extracellular spaces? It can be inside the blood vessels, or it can be inside interstitial tissue. So, here, this shows us kind of the breakdown. Now, only 20% of your body weight is actually extracellular. So we've got about 40% of body weight is intracellular. Now, where's the extra missing body weight? Because 20 and 40 only adds up to 60. Am I just bad at math? Oh, it's the solid material. All right, so 20% of body weight, more or less, is extracellular fluid. This is what we really get to mess with more than anything else. And which of these two spaces do we mess with the most? Do we mess with interstitial tissue very much? What do we actually mess with? We mess with the blood. So plasma is the water part of blood. This is the part that we're really going to be able to manipulate by giving fluids or by giving diuretics. Now, an electrolyte is anything that dissolves in a liquid and then has an ionic charge. So if it's a positive charge, we call it a cation. If it's a negative charge, we call it an anion. Hopefully you remember that from Chemistry 101. Or 1112, whatever they call it nowadays. The major body electrolytes. On the positive side, we have sodium, potassium, calcium, and magnesium. On the negative side, we have chloride, bicarbonate, phosphate, and sulfate. Now, fluid is technically anything that flows. So gas can be a fluid as well as liquids. But for medical purposes, when we say fluids, what we really mean is water and things that are dissolved in water, water solutions. So when we say fluid in healthcare, what we really mean is water. Now, the electrolytes are the ions dissolved in that water, sodium, potassium, bicarbonate, blah, blah, blah. Now, sometimes we'll use this medically for non-ions. So if we get an electrolyte panel in the hospital, that's going to include glucose. Glucose is not an ion, but we consider it an electrolyte just because it's easier to say, just get me an electrolyte panel rather than get me an electrolyte plus glucose, please. So that's, yeah, it's just a lazy thing. Now, two terms, osmolarity and osmolality. Osmolarity and osmolality refer to the amount of substance that is dissolved in a given amount of water. Osmolarity is when you do weight of the water. Osmolality is when you do the volume of the water. Now, as very convenient, water weight and water volume are the same. 1 liter equals 1 kilogram. So for the purpose of us, because we consider fluids to be water, osmolarity and osmolality are really the same thing for our purposes. So sometimes you'll hear them used interchangeably, but really what's truly being used is osmolality. Now, breakdown between intracellular versus extracellular. The major intracellular ions, we have potassium and we have phosphate. The major extracellular ions are sodium, chloride, and bicarbonate. Now, let's talk about the difference between intravascular fluid and interstitial fluid. What's the difference between them? They're both extracellular fluids. What's the difference between interstitial and intravascular fluid? Chemically speaking, electrolytely speaking. Proteins are the only difference. Which one has proteins? Intravascular or interstitial? Intravascular. So the only difference between the blood inside between the water inside a blood vessel and the water outside the blood vessel is the presence of proteins inside the blood vessel. The other ions are exactly the same. Now, what does that mean in terms of osmosis? Where is water going to want to go toward? Into the blood vessels because of that plasma protein. All right, now, ways that we control fluid and electrolyte movement. The very first one is diffusion. So diffusion is driven by high to low what? Concentration. So concentration pushes molecules, whether it's water or whether it's electrolyte, pushes it to areas where there's not very high concentrations. So it's kind of like if you're in a... How many of you have ever gone to the movies and there's like two people in one row and that's the row you want to sit in, but you don't want to sit next to them, so you sit one seat apart? And as people come in, you know, it's like there's always one seat in between people because they don't want to get too close. Well, it's kind of how ions are. They don't want to get too close to one another. So they spread out, and they only when it's all spread out, then they start clumping up. We have selective permeability. What that means is that in order for an electrolyte to move from one area of the body to another area of the body, chances are it has to go through a membrane of some kind. In order to get through that membrane, it has to be able to penetrate it. And what are membranes made up of? Phospholipid bilayer. Now, do ions penetrate phospholipid bilayers very well? No. They're kind of like oil and water. They don't like to get together. It is exactly like oil and water. What am I saying it's like? It is oil and water. So they don't want to go together. So in order for that ion to penetrate, what does it have to do? What has to be there? Either a carrier molecule or a channel or a pore. So the different kinds of pores and whether those pores are open or closed is going to change the distribution of ions in the body. We have facilitated diffusion, which is where there's carrier molecules, which allow ions to penetrate. And then we have active transport. So some of the ions are actually going to travel across the cell membrane by active transport. So it'll take energy to pull them across. The most famous active transport system in your body is called the sodium-potassium pump. Now, what did we say the major intracellular ion was? Intracellular is potassium, and the extracellular is sodium. The reason for that is the sodium-potassium pump. So it pumps potassium into the cell, pumps sodium outside the cell. Now, this formula right here, 2 times the sodium level plus the BUN level, plus the glucose level divided by 18, is a formula for figuring out osmolality, which is the concentration of plasma. Now, out of these three different things, which one has the most influence? Why is sodium? Because you're multiplying its effect by 2. Whereas like glucose, you're dividing its effect by 18. The BUN, you're leaving it as it is. So the most important in terms of determining osmolality of the blood, concentration of the blood, is going to be sodium. So here's the key take home of that message. Water in your body will follow sodium. Say it again. Water in the body. And you have to say it.
Water in the body will follow sodium.
Say it again.
Water in the body will follow sodium.
Say it again.
Water in the body will follow sodium.
When you go to bed tonight, you're going to dream about those words. You're going to wake up in the middle of the night screaming them. Because if you understand that simple sentence, you'll understand a lot of the things that are going to happen in the body and with the kidneys. So, water follows sodium. Where? In the body. All right, then we have hydrostatic pressure. Hydrostatic pressure will push water to other places. And what's the major source of hydrostatic pressure in our body? Contraction of the heart. And then the secondary one in the body is vasoconstriction of the arteries. So the two things together, vasoconstriction of the arteries and generation of the heart. Now, in order to have hydrostatic pressure in the first place, you need to have a volume of water. And what's responsible for that? Well, indirectly sodium, but what's the organ?
Kidneys.
And the way the kidneys get rid of or retain water is by manipulating sodium. And then we have what we call oncotic pressure, which is the pressure generated by plasma proteins. And that's going to pull water into the blood vessels. All right, some fun little pictures here. So here what we have is we have more electrolytes on this side of the membrane than on this side of the membrane. Can you see that? Do you want me to count them to prove it? You trust your eyes? Okay. Now, after time, what's happened is some of those ions have moved through the membrane and now they're equal. This is what will happen when you die. When you die, all of your active processes stop. Diffusion is the only thing that's working at that point, and eventually all of your ions will be exactly and evenly distributed. All right, now in this case, what we have is we have a semi-permeable membrane. So, in this case, it looks like the reds can move, but the blacks can't. So what will happen over a period of time is that the blacks, which one did I just say? One of the colors moves. So one of the color moved over, so now you've got more concentration over here overall. Now you've got a similar number of reds, but you've got more blacks. So over here you have more overall ions, and so what happens to the water is the water will actually shift to this side. Because not only does electrolytes want to move to where it's even, but water wants to move to where its concentration is even also. So the movement of water is called osmosis. The movement of other electrolytes is called diffusion. Does this make sense? I think we need to have better distribution of colors here. All right, now, here we actually have a cell membrane. So here's our cell membrane made up of a phospholipid bilayer. And then embedded in that, we have these two enzymes. Well, two of the same enzyme. It's called sodium potassium ATPase. Its job is to use ATP to push sodium outside the cell and to pull potassium inside the cell. We said this is the most important and the most numerous ion pump in your entire body. Every cell has one of these. Well, several hundred of these. All right, now, cells are selectively permeable. So what that means is that some of the ions inside of a cell are just too big or the wrong charge. They can't get in, they can't get out of the cell. So because you've got things that are trapped inside a cell, when you put it in a certain type of solution, different things will happen. Now, this is what we call an isotonic solution. And when we say tonic, what we're talking about is concentration. The word iso means the same. So in this case, we have a cell that's got the same concentration inside the cell as outside the cell. So that cell, is it going to absorb water or lose water? It's going to stay the same. Now here we have a cell in a hypotonic solution. That means that the concentration of the solution is lower than the cell. Now, what is that going to do? What's the water inside this? What's the water going to do? Is it going to go into the cell or leave the cell? It's going to go into it. Because in this case, there's more water outside the cell, concentratively speaking, than there is inside the cell. So the water outside the cell comes into the cell to dilute the cell so that they'll be equal. So what happens here is the cell actually gets bigger. Now, if the cell gets too big, what will happen? So it will lyse. So here's a very important thing. If you put pure water in someone's blood, you will destroy their blood cells. It will sting like crazy. And if you put enough in them, you could kill them. So we never put pure water inside a person, inside their veins, because kills what? The cells. And how does it kill the cells? It makes them get so big that they pop. Now, over here we have hypertonic. We've got more concentration in the solution than inside the cell. So now what happens to the cell? The water leaves out because it's trying to dilute the water around it, so it's going to shrink. Now, how many of you... Yes?
So the water's going to follow the concentration.
Yes, water will follow the concentration. Mm-hmm. Now, how many of you have ever had a sore throat and your parents told you to gargle with salt water? Did it work? Mm-hmm. No. Some people say it works. Now, the reasoning behind that is when you have salt water, you have a hypertonic solution. So you're gargling with it, and your throat is inflamed. So when you put that hypertonic solution on those inflamed cells, it shrinks them down, reducing the inflammation. So maybe you just didn't have enough salt in your hot water. Maybe it wasn't warm enough. Maybe you didn't gargle long enough. Or maybe it just doesn't work. But that's the theory behind it. All right, sodium is the largest determinant of osmolality. We already talked about that because of the formula. Now, in addition to the formula, look at the major concentrations in blood. The very highest one is sodium, with about 140, 145. Then we have, 135 to 145 is our normal range. So 140 would be the average. Then we have calcium, ranges from 8.5 to 10.5. Is that a huge difference? Yeah, that's a huge difference. So immediately you can see that already sodium is the biggest one, and now we're going to multiply its effect by 2. The next biggest, or one of the other ones important, potassium outside of the cell, in the blood, in interstitial fluid, it's only about 3.5 to 5. Now this is extremely important, because a very small change can mean very bad things for a person. So over here, if you drop 5 points on the sodium, that's like what, 2% or 3% change? If you change from 4 to 6, that's a 50% change. So small changes in potassium have very big effects. Small changes in sodium aren't as big of a deal.
Oh,
did I? I did. Huh. Yeah, we changed books, and so we decided that we would use the normal values inside them. So the new normal values are 9 to 11. The lab sheet that I gave you should have the correct values on it. All right. Now here's our basic, here's the formula again. If you use the averages, it comes out to about this. Normal tonicity is between 280 and 300. Low or hypotonic solutions are less than 280, and high concentration or hypertonic solutions are greater than 300. So if you remember, normal tonicity of blood is 280 to 300. This explains what happens in the arterial and the capillary. So over here we have artery. What's higher on the artery side? What's the major determinant of where water goes? Hydrostatic pressure generated by the heart, by the concentration of the heart. By the time it gets down to the arterial, it's dropped from an average of about 85-90 down to an average of 40. So we've got 40 pushing in. Now, what's pulling back in? We've got 40 pushing blood out of the, pushing water out of the vein, out of the capillary. What do we have pulling water back in? Oncotic pressure. Then, when we come over to the venous side, we have the same oncotic pressure as before, but now our hydrostatic pressure is much lower. So water gets pushed out on the arterial side and reabsorbed on the venous side. We talked about that a couple days ago, so hopefully you still remember that. And this is just a little review. The important thing for us to remember, on the arterial side, water pushes out. On the venous side, water pulls back in. What's the major difference between the arterial and the venous side that causes that difference? The difference in hydrostatic pressure.